Point 7. Breathing. I wasn't panting, but I was prepared to accept that I was breathing a little harder and steadier than normal. Most of the time, I'm not aware of breathing at all. It just happens, automatically, an involuntary reflex deep in the brain. But now, I could feel a relentless in through the nose, out through the mouth rhythm. In, out, in, out, like a machine, like a man using equipment underwater. I couldn't slow it down. I wasn't feeling much oxygen in the air. It was going in and coming out like an inert gas, like argon or xenon. It wasn't doing me any good at all. Point 8. A rigid forward stare. Check. But I excused myself because I was using it to assess all the other points, or because it was a symbol of pure focus or concentration. Normally, I would be gazing around, and not rigidly. Point 9. Mumbled prayers. Not happening. I was still and silent. My mouth was closed and not moving at all. In fact, my mouth was closed so hard my back teeth were hurting, and the muscles in the corners of my jaw were standing out like golf balls. Point 10. A large bag. Not present. Point 11. Hands in the bag, not relevant. Point 12. A fresh shave. Hadn't happened. I hadn't shaved for days. So, 6 for 12. I might or might not be a suicide bomber. And I might or might not be a suicide. I stared at my reflection and thought back to my first sight of Susan Mark. A woman heading for the end of her life, as surely and certainly as the train was heading for the end of the line. I took my elbows off my knees and sat back. I looked at my fellow passengers. 2 men, 1 woman. Nothing special about any of them. The train rocked on south with all its sounds. The rushing air, the clatter of expansion joints under the wheels, the scrape of the current collector, the whine of the motors, the squeals as the cars lurched one after the other through the long, gentle curves. I looked back at myself in the dark window opposite and smiled. Me? Against them. Not the first time. And not the last. I got out at 34th Street and stayed in the station. Just sat in the heat on a wooden bench and walked myself through my theories one more time. I replayed Lila Hoth's history lesson from the days of the British Empire. When contemplating an offensive, the very first thing you must plan is your inevitable retreat. Had her superiors back home followed that excellent advice? I was betting not. For 2 reasons. First, fanaticism. Ideological organizations can't afford rational considerations. Start thinking rationally and the whole thing falls apart. And ideological organizations like to force their foot soldiers into no-way-out operations to encourage persistence. The same way explosive belts are sewn together in back, not zippered or snapped. And second, a plan for retreat carried with it the seeds of its own destruction. Inevitably, a third or a fourth or a fifth bolt hole bought or rented 3 months ago would show up in the city records, just in case reservations at hotels would show up too. Same-day reservations would show up. 600 agents were combing the streets. I guessed they would find nothing at all, because the planners back in the hills would have anticipated their moves. They would have known that all trails would be exhausted as soon as the scent was caught. They would have known that, by definition, the only safe destination is an unplanned destination. So now the Hoths were out in the cold, with their whole crew. 2 women, 13 men. They had quit their place on 58th Street, and they were scuffling and improvising and crawling below the radar, which was exactly where I lived. They were in my world. It takes one to find one. I came up from under the ground into Herald Square, which is where 6th Avenue and Broadway and 34th Street all meet. By day, it's a zoo. Macy's is there. At night, it's not deserted, but it's quiet. I walked south on 6th and west on 33rd and came up along the flank of the faded old pile where I had bought my only uninterrupted night of the week. The MP5 was hard and heavy against my chest. The Hoths had only two choices, sleep on the street or pay off a night porter. Manhattan has hundreds of hotels, but they break down quite easily into separate categories. Most of them are mid-market or better, where staffs are large and scams don't work. Most of the down-market dumps are small. And the Hoths had 15 people to accommodate. 5 rooms, minimum. To find 5 empty, unobtrusive rooms called for a big place, with a bent night porter working alone. I know New York reasonably well. I can make sense of the city, especially from the kind of angles most normal people don't consider. And I can count the number of big old Manhattan hotels with bent night porters working alone on my thumbs. One was way west on 23rd Street, far from the action, which was an advantage, but also a disadvantage. More of a disadvantage than an advantage overall. Second choice, I figured. I was standing right next to the only other option. The clock in my head was ticking past 2:30 in the morning. I stood in the shadows and waited. I wanted to be neither early nor late. I wanted to time it right. Left and right, I could see traffic heading up on 6th and down on 7th. Taxis, trucks, some civilians, some cop cars, some dark sedans. The cross street itself was quiet. At 2:45, I pushed off the wall and turned the corner and walked to the hotel door. Chapter 73. The same night porter was on duty, alone. He was slumped on a chair behind the desk, staring morosely into space. There were fogged old mirrors in the lobby. My jacket was puffed out in front of me. I felt I could see the shape of the MP5's pistol grip and the curve of its magazine and the tip of its muzzle. But I knew what I was looking at. I assumed the night porter didn't.